remains to be seen. So this is the fifth time that I've given this homily, and I've noticed a couple of things as I've given this homily. And so you need to know this. Okay, this homily is a little bit like a fire hose. I'm just going to have to say a lot of things and not a lot of time. So just bear with me and go with me. Point number two, there's no way that I'm going to be able to say everything. My point in this homily is simply to put issues on the table, not to answer all kinds of details. So that's all really what that we have time for. As we enter into this second weekend of homily series on Catholic social teaching, I want to begin by giving us some important perspective points to help us understand what Catholic social teaching is and how it is that we use it, what it's for. Okay, so point number one, Catholic social teaching is not about politics. Catholic social teaching is not about politics. Catholic social teaching is about how we form our consciences. The social doctrine of the church touches upon many matters that are not only of faith, but of morals. And those moral matters do enter into the political sphere. But we have to know that Catholic social teaching is not partisan. Because we know that, I'm not the first person to tell you that we live in an imperfect world, right? There is no political party or policy platform or political candidate that can possibly encapsulate the full breadth of the truth of the church. So we know that what Catholic social teaching does is form our consciences well so that we can do the hard work of discerning how to be a good citizen. So point number one, it's not about politics, it's about forming your conscience. Point number two, in Catholic social teaching, there is a difference between separation of church and state and separation of politics from religion. They're not the same thing. Okay, separation of church and state. We live in a democratic republic, and so we vote for representatives who then go forth to govern on our behalf, and we know that in any free society, the church says it's a good thing for the state to have its competency and for the church to have its competency and for them to coexist with each other in a way that informs each other but is not overly commingled. So the Catholic Church in her teaching does not promote theocracy. It does not promote society rule by religious right. Okay, democracy is a good thing. Free society is a good thing. Separation of church and state, we're good with that. However, my politics can never be separated from my religion. It's a misnomer. As Christians, we cannot act in that way. Why? Because how I act in my public participation in life has to be informed by and dependent on what I know to be true by the light of faith. So in other words, God is the one who shows us what reality truly is. And only by knowing what reality truly is can we know how to order society rightly. The church would say this, that my politics must be at the service of my religion. My politics has to be informed by and serve the truths that God says are true. And so it is an inconsistent thing for us as Catholics to say, my religion is over here and my politics is over here, and when I go into my politics, I leave my religion at the door. Can't do that. Okay, point number two, you cannot separate your politics from your religion. Point number three, how I act in my public participation of society depends on who I think I am. How I participate in public depends on who I think I am. And so another way to say this is, in order for me to participate well in public life, I have to have a biblical worldview. Flesh that out, Father Brian. Okay, I will. The biblical worldview is what tells me the greatest and fullest truth about the nature of everything that is around me. It tells me the truth about what creation is and what creation is for and who man is and what man has been made for. A biblical worldview is nothing other than the basic Christian message that God has created all things out of the gift of his goodness and that mankind is God's very special creation, endowed with the dignity of the divine himself. A biblical worldview takes seriously the notion that every human heart is wounded and fallen in sin from grace, and that in order for human society to be restored to goodness, that solution is not ultimately going to come in systems and structures, but it's going to come in the healing of the human heart. The biblical worldview reveals to us that Jesus has come to save us, thank you God, from our fallenness, from our neediness, and from our woundedness, and that he transforms our lives so that we can enter and make the world into a transformed world, so that heaven can come to earth, and so that earth and all people on earth may go to heaven to receive the full destiny of their dignity. That is the biblical worldview, the basic Christian message. And in order for us to be good public citizens, we have to see the world through that lens. It's the only way that we ever get society right. It's the only way that we can organize ourselves correctly as a human community, is if we do so from a biblical perspective. All right, so that's it. Not about politics, it's about forming your conscience. Cannot separate your politics from your religion, and you have to have a biblical worldview. This is what helps us understand Catholic social teaching. Now we're going to very quickly, as best as I can, dive into two cornerstone teachings of Catholic social teaching. Number one, dignity of the human person. And number two, the virtue of solidarity. And I'm going to use the single papal encyclical to kind of just cut right to the chase. The church has written all kinds of beautiful things for the last 130 years about social doctrine in the life of the world as the church sees it. And I'm going to try just using one. And it's a papal encyclical written by Pope John Paul II called Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life. He wrote it in 1995. And I think it speaks very well about the essence of what it means to preach the social doctrine and to live the social doctrine of the church. So let's begin with the first one, the dignity of the human person. And I think this is encapsulated well by the opening lines of that encyclical, and I'd like to read them to you. Pope John Paul wrote this about the dignity of the human person, the foundational cornerstone of all Catholic social teaching. He said, "The gospel of life is at the heart of Jesus' message. When he presents the heart of his redemptive mission, Jesus says, 'I came that they may have life and have it abundantly.' And so man is called to a fullness of life which far exceeds the dimensions of his earthly existence, because in the fullness of life consists sharing the very life of God. The loftiness of this supernatural vocation reveals the greatness and the inestimable value of human life, even in its temporal phase." In other words, even in its earthly way. It is precisely this supernatural calling which highlights the character of each individual's earthly life. And so earthly life remains a sacred reality entrusted to us to be preserved with a sense of responsibility and brought to perfection, in love and in the gift of ourselves to God and of our brothers and sisters. And so even in the midst of difficulties and uncertainties, every person sincerely open to truth and goodness can come to recognize in the natural law written in the human heart the sacred value of human life from its very beginning to its end, and can affirm the right of every human being to have this primary good respected to the highest degree. Upon the recognition of this right, that is the right to life, every human community and the political community itself are founded." So it's a really direct zinger at the end of that opening, some of those opening lines of this encyclical, that this life, this truth, that the dignity of the human person is of inestimable value because God has created it and made it supremely sacred with a supernatural, eternal calling, helps us to recognize in that sacred life that it has the dignity to be protected, that every human life And in fact, the protection of every human life is the very foundation of any human community, and in fact, of any political community. And so this truth about the dignity of the human person in respect to its every human person's right to life is why the church speaks so publicly and so insistently about certain moral matters that touch upon even political realities and public policies. So we're speaking about hot button issues that determine whether or not a society believes life is sacred and worthy of living, like the issues of euthanasia and assisted suicide, and the issue of abortion. Because in these public policies, a society is going to determine whether it actually believes life is sacred, no matter what. Whether life is worth defending at all costs and in all stages. It is incumbent upon individuals and upon states to realize that there can be no true human community if all life is not defended. And in fact, this is so important that it is one of the few places that the church encumbers its people in a very direct way in terms of their public participation in their voting power. Because the church says this issue, the right to life, is so important that it's part of what constitutes whether or not you are in communion with the Catholic Church. So the church is very direct. The church says if you are Catholic and you are a politician, and as a Catholic politician, you promote policies and bring about policies that directly attack innocent human life. In other words, if you are a Catholic politician and you support pro-euthanasia policies or pro-abortion policies, that stance as a Catholic politician separates you from communion with the Catholic Church, and you should not present yourself for Holy Communion. It's that important. It's that foundational. Because the right to life is the foundation of every other right that we have. And because God is the author of life and we are not the author of life. But this is not only encumbered upon Catholic politicians, this is also encumbered upon each of us as lay faithful, whether you're clergy and you sit in the sanctuary or whether you're lay faithful and you sit in the pews on Sunday. The church also says this, that if you are a Catholic, and even if you are not a politician, if you vote, if you use your voting power for policies or politicians because they are pro-abortion or because they are pro-euthanasia. In other words, if as a Catholic you use your voting power in order to bring about in society policies that directly usurp God's authority as author of all human life, that places you outside of communion with the Catholic Church. And you should not present yourself for Holy Communion. Now, some people would call that really mean and nasty. Other people would call it, no, this is a really important truth that God says is foundational for what it means to be in communion with me. Because Jesus is the one who came to give life. And it is not for us to decide whose life is worth living or not worth living. And so the dignity of the human person in Catholic social teaching first and foremost enters into public policy in matters of the defense of life at all stages. But it doesn't end there. The other principal place where it enters into public policy is in matters of religious freedom. So Catholic social teaching in regards to the dignity of the human person says that any free society and any prudent government will humbly know that as the state, it must defend and promote the free exercise of religion. Why? Because only in the free exercise of religion can mankind actually come to know the full truth of who he is. And by knowing who he is, only then can he organize his life and societal life rightly. If he knows himself wrongly, he will organize society wrongly. If he knows himself rightly, he can organize society rightly. And the state must know that it has neither the responsibility nor the ability to tell mankind who mankind is. The state cannot do that. Why? Because the state does not create human identity. The state can only respect it and defend it for what it is. It is not the state that teaches us about who we are. It is our faith that teaches us about who we are. And so all free societies and our participation in public life must be oriented towards state governments that defend the free exercise of human religion so that people can know who they are and so that human community can flourish. And if we understand these things, these fundamental things about the dignity of the human person, it leads very directly to the second foundational element of Catholic social teaching, which is the virtue of solidarity. Because when I know in truth who I am, as God has created me to be, with my own sublime dignity and my own supernatural destiny, I know that the same is true of everyone around me. And that I also then am connected to not merely my personal good, but to the common good of all peoples. And this is where I want to give the second quote of St. John Paul as he continues on in the Evangelium Vitae. He says this: solidarity, as a firm and persevering determination to commit oneself to the common good, also needs to be practiced through participation in social and political life. Serving the gospel of life thus means that the family works to ensure that the laws and institutions of the state in no way violate the right to life from conception to natural death, but rather protect and promote it. And although it is true that the future of humanity passes by way of the family, it must be admitted that modern social, economic, and cultural conditions make the family's task of serving life more difficult and demanding. In order to fulfill its vocation as the sanctuary of life, as the cell of a society which loves and welcomes life, the family urgently needs to be helped and supported. Communities and states must guarantee all the support, including economic support, which families need in order to meet their problems in a truly human way. So St. John Paul teaches us that the virtue of solidarity commits me to the common good because it helps me to realize that I am not my own island, but that I exist in a human community with other people who have a vocation and an eternal destiny to God. And he further says that the family, the nuclear family, the unit cell of society, is the first and primary place where solidarity is experienced and expressed. Why? Right? Because the family is the first place where I find out that I'm not alone, but that there are other people like me. And the family is also the first place where I find out that I'm not the center of the universe, but that I have to live in cooperation towards the good of things and people that are beyond me. And so in committing myself to the common good, I have to help society become a society wherein its policies and protections promote healthy human families, because we cannot have a healthy society if we don't have healthy families. What the common good creates in me also is a virtue of temperance and justice regarding the goods of creation. Because in recognizing that all the people around me are like me, it helps me to know that all of the goods of creation, that their original intent by God is that they be available for everybody. All of the good of creation is for everybody. It's for the common good. There is no part of creation that is allowed to be had and possessed by only some people to the exclusion of other people. God has not intended that this way. And so the virtue of solidarity, personally in society, helps us to orient ourselves, our families, and our institutions in such a way that all families can have what they need in order to thrive. In order so that no one is unjustly deprived of the goods of creation. And the church says that this is true even of private industry and private property, that the goods and the blessings that God gives to me and that I accrue to myself through my own personal industry have their ultimate destination, not simply to me, but through me also to the world. This is known as the universal destination of goods. That even the good things that God gives to me are not, as Jesus says in one of the parables, for the sake of me tearing down my barns and building larger barns and then putting all my grain in it so that I can eat and drink and be merry just for my own good. I have a responsibility also because I am my brother's keeper, and that even my private industry, even my private goods, are for the sake of the common good as well. And so where does solidarity walk into public policy? It walks firstly into policies that regard the human family, especially the nuclear family, issues of marriage and human sexuality and how those are ordered in society. But it also enters into the place of the care of human creation, that we are the brothers keepers of each other, and that we are to care for the goods of the earth so that everyone has access to them. Not only ourselves, but also our children and our grandchildren. Because if we destroy the world, we make them suffer. And so we have to also see how public policy that involves the use of the creation of goods in a prudent way, including the distribution of goods and wealth so that no one is left out in an absolute sense because of greed or because of power or because of selfishness, we are called as Catholics to know that these things must be addressed. And how these things are addressed in a complicated world do not always have very clear answers. We know this. The church knows this. Discussion, debate is healthy. But that the family is primary is not up for discussion. That we have a commitment to the common good of all people is never up for discussion. That we have a responsibility to ensure that the goods of creation are for everybody is not up for discussion. As Catholics, because this is what God has created. So this gives rise to all kinds of questions about specific matters that I don't have time. And then, as I said, my point is not to answer the questions, but to put the issues on the table and to understand that Catholic social teaching helps us to know how to return right to the wedding feast, how to organize ourselves in such a way that we are a culture of life, that we are a culture of dignity, that we are a culture of the common good and of human solidarity, so that we care for the goods of creation, so that we care for each other, and so that we live in community in the way that God intends. So after all that, let's just say a simple prayer. Jesus, we ask you to please come help us, to come help our world, to come help our society, to come help our culture, that it may always be a culture of life. Help us to discern well, Jesus, how you want us to be citizens in a public way, even in a political way. Jesus, we ask you to give us discernment in all of the various matters that involve human community, but make us always faithful to you and to what you teach us, so that our communities may flourish and so that we may all go to heaven. In Jesus' name, amen.